This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ah, good Friday to you. We've reached it to the end of the week. Thursday night football last night, the Browns with a victory over the Steelers. If you didn't wait till the end of it, it got a little interesting if you're a numbers guy, as the Browns scored a touchdown, as the Steelers were laddering the ball all over the place, trying to do something. The Browns recovered it in the end zone. Made the final score 29-17, but that was pretty much it, because the Steelers in the second half took a 14-13 lead and turned it into a 29-17 loss. This is more on the Cleveland Browns, though, because they might have a quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. Now, they have their quarterback in Deshaun Watson. There's no question there. They owe him so much money, they're going to make him do everything. But Jacoby Brissett is doing what you want a backup quarterback to do, right? Keep the ship afloat. Don't get crazy. Don't start losing games you should win. Manage the games you can. Play well enough to give the teams a chance. This team should be 3-0. No question about it. After how the Jets came back in sort of a really, in loose definition, miracle comeback, scoring two touchdowns in 82 seconds. The Browns should be 3-0. And can you imagine, the idea of the Browns being one of the teams that right now, 2-1 on the season, they put themselves in that spot after 3 weeks, after three games where, everything's going smooth right now for them. And then Deshaun Watson, again, controversy, no controversy, right? He comes into this league very, very fresh at a point where everybody else may be reeling a bit from injuries, exhaustion, etc. They're going to get a new, brand new Pro Bowl level quarterback. The Steelers are wondering sort of the same thing on their other side. How long does Mike Tomlin play the coach that doesn't want to, that sort of stays with his decision? Mitch Trubisky and the Steelers fall in the second half. They had a good first half. They had a terrible second half. It happened against the Patriots, and it happened against the Bengals. And now people are going to be calling for Kenny Pickett more and more, even though Mitch Trubisky played good enough in the first half to make you think that there is something there. But instead, what they have is they've got a system where the Browns and the Steelers right now are two teams going in two different directions with the quarterbacks that are really holding the place for somebody else. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on a Friday. And good Friday to you as we get you set for the weekend. So Steelers and Browns, I don't know, was it a good game for anybody that wasn't emotionally involved in the game? Did you find it to be a good game?
Well, yeah, but I'm also emotionally involved through you.
Oh, okay.
I was rooting for the Steelers for you.
I was more like, oh, goodness gracious. Oh, that was good. Oh, wait a minute. That wasn't good. So I was more that through the game to really determine if it was well played. But I got to tell you, Jacoby Brissett, I would say that the Browns right now have not really opened with anybody strong. Let's just call it what it is. They played Carolina, and the Panthers aren't a very good football team. The Jets aren't a very good football team, and the Steelers aren't a very good football team. So I don't want to go overboard here and talk about how Jacoby Brissett's 3-0, and this is amazing. And he's doing it. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to win the games that the Browns are fully equipped to win. Right. So his job at quarterback is the most important job, but they've built their defense. They've built their offense. They've built their running game. They've got receivers. They got Amari Cooper now. His job is to not screw that up against teams on paper they should beat, that they're better at. And in this league, as we say, that's a very thin line. But 2-1, it could have been 3-0. He's doing the job you want him to do, which is, hey, listen, Deshaun Watson's going to be out 11 games. And we feel like with Deshaun Watson, we're a playoff team, a championship-level team. Okay,
So Brissett's job is to make sure that the record when Deshaun Watson gets into this league is decent enough to give the Browns a fighting chance to get into the postseason, and let's see what happens. What do the Browns become with Deshaun Watson? Maybe they're worse. Maybe, you know, maybe Deshaun Watson's so rusty that they're worse, but that's not his job. His job is to worry about the 11 games that he will play for them. And he's playing really pretty. He's playing pretty good. I mean, he threw some nice balls yesterday. He really did. Like his back of the end zone touchdown, that was a beautiful throw. And Mitch Trubisky had a pretty good first half. I thought Trubisky's first half was enough to quiet the Kenny Pickett stuff from the complete Kenny Pickett Kool-Aid drinkers, right? Like, there's going to be people that want Kenny Pickett no matter what. And there's going to be people that, you know, are on the fence a little bit. Like, hey, look, I kind of get what the Steelers are doing. I kind of get the way they want to grow Pickett into this role. They don't want to lose him in a league that can be very brutal to young quarterbacks. And I don't mean lose like to injury. I mean lose like to confidence and everything. I thought Mitch Trubisky played well enough to sort of sway those people to say, all right, maybe Trubisky should have this job for a while. They might leave here with a victory. They were up 14-13. They looked like they could go toe-to-toe with the Browns. Browns would score. Steelers would come back and score. So it looked like, you know, this game was manageable. And then in the second half, they did what they've done all year long so far. And in 3 years, 3 weeks, I mean, it's been the same story. They can't close out games. They cannot finish off teams. They cannot get back in games where they find themselves trailing. The game against Cincinnati was quote-unquote lost in the second half. Once the Bengals started to figure out things, they came back in that game. Now, the Steelers won it in overtime, but the Bengals had about five chances to win it and didn't capitalize on any of those chances. Against the Patriots, the Patriots scored, and then the Steelers had two possessions in the fourth quarter where they were trying to get back into the game to take either the lead or tie, and they turned down on three and outs, two three and outs. And in the second half of this game, they managed just 3 points, and Mitch Trubisky went from throwing for over 100 yards in the first half to he had 41 passing yards until that final drive that set them up for the field goal. So the team wasn't moving the ball downfield. They weren't doing anything. So in the Browns' case, and I was saying at this top of the hour, so you've got these two quarterbacks, and in all, realistically, one more knows it than the other. They're holding the job for somebody else, right? Jacoby Brissett knows he's holding the job for Deshaun Watson, right? Like, I love when people were like, the Browns may have found their quarterback. Oh, no. They paid for their quarterback, right? All that guaranteed that Deshaun Watson's their quarterback for five more years. But Mitch Trubisky, while he's fighting for to be the starting quarterback for the Steelers, I mean, in a perfect world for him, he would be playing so well that the Steelers would have no choice but to make him the starter going forward. He's still a relatively young guy that could be in this league a long time. Ideally for him, it's like, yeah, I know you've signed the future here, but let's turn this into a Rodgers love situation where that kid never sees the field. That's idealistic for him. But in realistically here, he's holding the job until Kenny Pickett gets the job, which could come any week now. So both of these guys played good in the first half, looked good in the first half, and Brissett carried that over a bit. Now, Brissett's a little bit as an advantage here because he's got a running game, and the Steelers don't really have it yet. Najee Harris didn't run very well last night. They don't have a good offensive line. And that's my biggest concern with playing Kenny Pickett, is that playing Kenny Pickett on this offense that doesn't protect well, Trubisky had to leave the pocket a number of times, they can't establish the running game, and you can then tee up on the passing game. I wonder what that would do to a rookie quarterback in this league. And so I know that Mike Tomlin is sort of holding back a little bit, but he also has to really evaluate what's going on here. If coaches look at when you talk about wins and losses, right? We always talk about teams and they go, well, they got the win. Doesn't matter how they win, they win. But coaches don't see it that way. Look at the Browns, for example. The Browns are 2-1, lost to the Jets. You go over the tape and you go, all right, how did we lose to the Jets? What were some things that were wrong? They won the game last night. We won the game. Great. But what could we have done better? What do we look at? Even in games that are like 35-0, even like the Buffalo Bills who annihilated Tennessee, Sean McDermott and that coaching staff are going over that tape as if that game was that was a one-point loss. Because they're looking for, even though we won by a zillion points, was there one defensive player out of position on certain plays? Was there a linebacker that didn't react quick enough on this play? Was there an offensive lineman that got burnt on this play and it didn't affect us? Was there a wide receiver that ran the wrong route? Was all these things. They're looking for the little tiny details to get better. So even in a blowout where you think, oh, it doesn't matter, a win's a win, coaches don't see it that way. Coaches go, no, I want all 11 people on the field to be the best 11 people that we have. So if you blow out a team, but you have one linebacker, second-year pro, and he's playing out of position, and you may not notice it because it doesn't affect the play, but they noticed it, you know, that guy might get replaced. So all of these coaches are evaluating every single little minute detail of their team, regardless of their record. And the Steelers are evaluating Mitch Trubisky as well as everybody else around us. So that's one of the reasons that Tomlin is not so much saying we need a change at quarterback. You know, he knows that Mitch Trubisky right now is struggling. But he knows probably more than a lot of people know that there are details within that offense that are not Mitch Trubisky's fault. He also knows what plays are being called by Matt Canada. He's weighing all of it. He's bringing it all together. And his job is not only to put the best team out on the field, but he also has to make sure when that decision is made, it is the right decision for the 52 other guys on the team. It is not going to be a season, at least in Tomlin's world, other coaches may do this, but at least in Mike Tomlin's world, this is not going to be a season where we watch Kenny Pickett grow as a quarterback. Kenny Pickett is either ready to play in the National Football League, based on everything that is involved in that, his ability, his knowledge, his confidence, and the tools around him, or he isn't. And Tomlin is not going to throw him out there to satisfy a fan base that may be screaming because they're 1-2 and have not played well in any of the games, really, offensively. I mean, the defense was so magnificent against the Bengals, but they lost T.J. Watt, so that's you can figure why they haven't gotten pass rush in two games. But the offense hasn't been good. And it just to replace him with Kenny Pickett, just to say Kenny Pickett has to play, that's not the nature of Tomlin. But I will say one thing that does concern me is that we're all sort of victims to our own hubris sometimes, right? We all have, it doesn't even matter. It could be in your house. It could be in your job. It could be in your relationships, whatever. But some of us we get so caught up in what we stand for or what we believe that sometimes we don't change and therefore circumstances around us get worse. And I think that's where I worry about Tomlin. Tomlin is so old school in that mindset, and he's so football guy sometimes, and it's led him to have such tremendous success. He's been with the Steelers forever. He's never had a losing season. He's one of the top successful coaches in this league, and this league has. He's one of the top coaches this league has had just in terms of record-wise. But I wonder if he makes this decision not on, hey, the offensive line isn't that good, and the running game's that good, and Mitch Trubisky's more experienced to deal with that than a rookie. Or I made the Mitch Trubisky decision, and I'm not going to be swayed by anybody. Even though that day is coming. And when that day does come that Kenny Pickett plays, the fan base is going to say, we made this happen. And Tomlin is going to say, nobody made this happen but me. Regardless of who's right, it's going to happen. Because again, if this continues, he is not putting his team in the best position to win. If they don't get better at play calling, at quarterback play, they're not doing anybody else a service on this football team. But again, it's not going from Mitch Trubisky to another veteran. It is going from Mitch Trubisky to a rookie. And rookies, we've seen this time and time again, we've seen rookies get lost in this league where they get defeated, they get confused. The game is so much different. It is exponentially different. The talent is so much greater You can see it. You can see in the NBA, for example, a kid can dominate college basketball for 1 year. He gets in the league. He's surrounded by good pros. The game flows. The game's natural. And next thing you know, he's averaging 15 points a night, and he gets it. It just comes. It's basketball. This is different. The windows for a quarterback are shorter. The timing is shorter. The hits are harder. Right? And that's everybody that is in this league. I've said it many times, but I have to repeat this sometimes because I think it's lost on people who say, he's no good, he's no good. The people that play in the NFL, they're the best football players in the world. Every single one of them. Every single one of them is the best player in the world. And Kenny Pickett knows that, and Steelers know that. But until you're out there on the field in a game situation where this is where the money is made, it's not made in joint practices. It's not made in preseason games. It's not made in workouts or anything like that. First team offensive reps. The money these guys make is on Sundays, Thursdays, Mondays. That's where the money is made. And when guys are going after their money, they're going after you. And I think Mitch Trubisky is smart enough and more veteran enough that that's why Tomlin holds on to him. Because Trubisky's been through this before. Kenny Pickett hasn't. And when Kenny Pickett goes out there against teams that are going to come after him hard because he's a rookie, you could lose him, and then you never get him back. All right, we'll talk more about this game last night because I do think the Browns are in a pretty good spot, again, with the way Jacoby Brissett is playing. We'll also get into week number 3 in the NFL coming up on what's going on Sunday. But coming up next, we talked about this yesterday. Ume Udoka of the Boston Celtics was suspended. We didn't know how long. Well, now we know how long, but we don't know really the details. We'll talk about that next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so again, Steelers-Browns last night. We got a full good. There were some good games. I was going over the games last night, and there are some real interesting rematches that we're going to get to when we go over our games. You know, you can find these little bit of like, oh, that guy's returning and that guy's returning. There's some ones that are obvious. But we'll get to that coming up throughout the show this morning. But Ime Udoka has been suspended for the entire year. We brought you the news yesterday that the Celtics had suspended him, but then were holding off. They weren't sure what the length of the suspension was. It was a suspension, and then they decided that yesterday they were going to process this violation of personal rules and violations of team policy, and then to come up with an answer to how long he was going to be suspended. And the answer was the entire year. His employment with the team is still up for discussion. Apparently, this is a big deal. But the thing is, we don't really know the details of exactly what's happening here, other than we know that he was involved in a consensual relationship with a female member of the staff. Now, he is a very important member of the hierarchy of the Boston Celtics as a head coach. This is one of the reasons corporations and companies put policies in against relationships with subordinates, because it opens the company up to a whole bunch of potential liability and lawsuits, sexual harassment suits, all of that stuff. And if that employee, for example, gets promoted over another employee, next thing you know, the company's opened itself up way too much. So I get it. I get it. I do have to say the amount of people that don't get it is astonishing to me, because I think that there is a disconnect from people who have spent years and years working with HR departments and then those who don't. And there was a lot of, I could see this yesterday on social media, people that just didn't quite understand why the Celtics had this policy in the first place. But I also could then see the amount of people who have been in the corporate world for a while and do understand why the Celtics had this policy. But we don't really know the details. Now, CBS Sports has a report that the woman has filed complaints with the Celtics that Ime Udoka had sent her disturbing messages, and that she filed a complaint within the Celtics organization, and that's what started this investigation in the first place. That is being reported. There's been no confirmation of that from the Celtics. So this could be a little speculation. It comes from a source, unnamed, of course, but that's at least what CBS Sports is reporting, that this is what happened. But we're not 100% sure. Now, that's the other thing to throw into this equation here. The Celtics know, because they were notified of this in July. And they went down and investigated this. Brad Stevens is the team president, former coach, is now team president. He was involved in it. He was involved in discussions. So as a result of this, we got it about 2 months later, they went and said, you know what, we have to suspend the coach. Now, then they had to decide how long they're going to suspend him for. And now they've suspended him for the full season. And this is an important season for the Celtics. They're coming off winning the East, but they won the East with a second half surge. They were kind of all right. They were around 500 in January, and then they started winning a lot of games. I mean, a lot of games. He really took that team and took them to the stratosphere. They went through the postseason. They, swept Brooklyn, got to the NBA Finals, had a good battle with Golden State, just not quite good enough. And then they got a little bit better. They added some players, Malcolm Brogdon, whatnot. They've got a little bit better. And now he was supposed to be the guy because he changed sort of the culture there. He treated players in a different way and they responded to him very, very well. Right? I mean, they went on a 28-7 run over the final 35 games. Right? And then it was just a really impressive run in the playoffs. He was one of, there's only been a handful of coaches that have ever gone to the finals in their first year as a head coach. And he's one of them. So, whatever this is, this was worthy of the Celtics making two decisions. Either one, suspending him for a year, that's a decision they did make. They might fire him. Now, again, we don't know any of the details. We don't know what it is. And if the CBS Sports story is correct, and again, I don't know if it is, but it is being reported that she filed some complaints to the Celtics organization about him. So they were in a consensual relationship. That's the other thing that is missing in this. For everybody that wants to grab onto a few little facts of this story and then run with it as two loving people having a loving relationship, and the evil Celtics came in and said, that's not allowed here. In fact, you're suspended. You don't know the details. This could have been a consensual relationship gone very, very badly. This could have been a consensual relationship which she had enough of. And he didn't have enough of. And he's higher up on the food chain, if you will, within the organization. There's a whole bunch of things at play here that we don't know. So before you start thinking that somehow this is the bad Celtics ruining a consensual, loving relationship, there's probably a lot more to this that led to the suspension. And there's one key term of this. Violations of team policy, not violation of team policy. Again, we don't know what those violations were. Nobody has gotten any information as to exactly what this relationship was and where it went. Right? Because I hear this all the time. People date in offices all the time. This might be way more than having a cup of coffee. Heck, it may even be way more than two people having a consensual physical relationship. If he was overly aggressive, if he sent her threatening texts or whatever it was, because he couldn't, she wanted to break it off, he didn't, all these things that are being speculated, the Celtics have an obligation to protect that employee. To not put her in a workplace like that. That is one of the reasons you don't have this in the first place. Because when you're in HR, this is what you protect your company from, right? Human resources doesn't protect you. They protect the company. That's how it works. Most of us who've worked in corporations know that. And so they're protecting the Celtics because if you have two people within the company that have a relationship and one is keep trying to hang on and the other one's trying to break it off and it creates a hostile work environment, she doesn't feel safe coming into the office and she's uncomfortable around them because they had this relationship, that's something companies don't want to deal with at all. And now Ume Udoka is out as the Celtics head coach at least for 1 year, and we'll see going further. All right, we'll come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. I wanted to give credit where credit is due on the Ime Udoka stuff. CBS Sports reporting on a story The Athletic has been breaking. So they just kind of gave The Athletic credit, so I wanted to give The Athletic credit. So I'm going to basically read this part about Ime Udoka. The Athletic is now reporting that the Celtics organization first became aware of the relationship between Udoka and a female member of the team staff in July. According to The Athletic, the Celtics were told at the time the relationship was consensual, but recently the woman accused Udoka of making unwanted comments towards her. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reports that Udoka, 45, was facing suspension because of his role in a consensual relationship with a female staff member. Also, according to ESPN, the relationship was considered a violation of the organization's policy. All right, so that is some of the details that are coming out on this. I don't think we'll ever get the full story, and I don't know if it's really any of our business anyway, but that's where it's heading. The Celtics had a choice, though. I don't know. The Celtics really did. People are wondering if the Celtics as a team like secretly released the details of the firing, or not the firing, the suspension. And I've seen teams do this where publicly they stand on the podium and say, we're not going to be talking about this. We'll not address this. We just have to tell you that this person has been suspended. Right. And then they stand up on the higher ground. Right. But then secretly word gets out through somebody within the team. I mentioned any names, but I hear that this is the reason, blah, blah, blah. That happens a lot. It happens in politics. It happens in sports. That's basically how the game is played. You put out a great public face of decorum and status, and then secretly you're like, well, this is why. And people believe the Celtics did this. I totally would believe that, because I think the Celtics don't want to suspend a coach and then not say why. I think it opens up too many questions about the organization. I mean, a guy leads you to the NBA Finals in 1 year, and then you're excited about the upcoming season. You feel like you've got better. You feel like you've got the right coach in place. You know, he's one of the 45, relatively young, smart basketball coach that delivered when the Celtics couldn't figure out, even with Brad Stevens at times, how to make the team click a little bit better. And Ime Udoka found a way to make it click better. I think you wouldn't want to go, he's been suspended. And everybody goes, why? Goes, well, nobody's business. Well, you know the press is going to – that's not going to work in Boston, right? It really won't work in anywhere where there's an NBA team. But it ain't working in Boston. They're going to dig, and they're going to find it out anyway. So I wonder if they just sort of did that old switcheroo. We'll stand here and not give you any details, but we'll give you the details on the underside. And I think that's where you're going to start probably seeing a little bit more of this. But that's a big, big deal. This story is a big story for the NBA. This guy is a really brilliant coach, and what he did with the Celtics was amazing. I mean, we talked about it during the playoffs with Brian Barrett in Boston at WEEI. Just talked about how, again, you know, Brad Stevens was a fine coach, but there was something that this team needed, this little kick, and his relationship with the players and the way he dealt with the better players on this team, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and how he got the best out of them in certain situations. And it really clicked in the second half of the year. And it clicked all the way through to the postseason. And I'll tell you, I know Golden State was obviously the favorites and whatnot, and they did pull it off and won it. But I wouldn't have been surprised if the Celtics had won that series. There were moments where I thought the Celtics were playing better at times against Golden State. But in the end, the Warriors were just a little too strong. But there was a lot of feeling like the right guy was in place with the Celtics. So this is actually, you know, a pretty big story. But I think there's some more details that are going to be popping up. All right, as we continue this morning, we'll get more back into the National Football League. As last night's game, Cleveland Browns go to 2-1. The Steelers drop to 1-2. Wasn't the most well-played game in terms of excitement. It was good at the beginning, though. It looked like a back-and-forth game. Robert on Facebook made the same kind of thought I had with this. The Browns went down the field, had like a 7-play drive, scored a touchdown, and then the Steelers came right back, and they scored a touchdown, and it looked like this was going to be good. And then the second half, just the Steelers were just not effective. And just sort of went back into the shell of not being able to move the football very well. And and that's what sort of doomed them. It doomed them against the Patriots, and it really doomed them against the Bengals, even though they pulled that game out. That game could have been lost on a number of occasions, and they could have been 0-3. I will say this, continuing my thought on Mike Tomlin, I do not think Tomlin is going to try to preserve a personal winning record. I don't feel like he's that kind of guy. Like where he'll, I think he just wants to win to try to win. I don't think he's going to make drastic changes earlier than he should or later than he should based on some sort of goal to not have a losing season as a head coach in the National Football League. But that being said, I hope he just doesn't fall into that trap of holding on, because in the end, he's afraid to admit maybe it wasn't the right idea to keep Trubisky in as long as he is. I mean, and I'm not talking three games fine. I'm talking about if Trubisky's doing this in week 8, 9, 10, he's going to have to answer to he may not have to feel like he has to answer to the fan base. The fan base is going to start wondering why is, and if it's personal feeling of, hey, I'm going to hang on to this because I said I don't want to listen to the fans and make a rash decision. And if I appear to make a rash decision, I'm falling into the pressure of the fan base, and I don't want to be a coach perceived to fall into the pressure of the fan base. Well, I got news for him. No matter when you make that decision to go with Kenny Pickett, you're going to be doing exactly what the fan base wants. The fan base is going to want Kenny Pickett today, next week, the week after next. I mean, they know it's coming eventually. They drafted him in the first round. So whenever he makes that decision, it's going to be perceived as if he's listened to the fans. I don't know what mark he thinks that people won't be doing that. Right? I saw this in Denver. Kyle Orton was the quarterback for the Broncos and wasn't doing very well. Tim Tebow was on the sidelines, and John Fox, oh boy, Tebow. Nope. Fans were chanting it at games. Tebow. Nope. Finally, he did. Finally, he relented. He said, fine. And he put Tebow in a game against the Miami Dolphins. It was late in the season of 2011. Not really late, probably midpoint, little like October-ish, late October. And Tebow was terrible, except for the final 2 minutes of the game, which would be the standard. Like that was Tebow's year that year. Like just awful football. Oh, this guy can't throw. Oh, this guy can't audible. Oh, this guy like can't run. He couldn't do anything. Then the final 2 minutes of the game, he'd be magical and he'd pull off these wins. And he did that over and over again. And Fox was in a real awful situation. John Elway was in the same situation too, because they didn't draft him. Josh McDaniels drafted him. Now in this case, the Steeler organization did draft Kenny Pickett, but in Tebow's situation, they wanted so badly to tell the fan base he's not the guy. And the fan base was like, yeah, he is. He's winning games. And like, yeah, I know. But do you want a quarterback that's just winning these miracle games? Or do you want a quarterback that's a long-term answer to this organization? And they were like, no, we don't care. We want him. And it didn't work. You know, they made it to the playoffs. They beat the Steelers. City's on fire for this guy. He loses to the Patriots. And then people started seeing, okay, there is a big drop off here. And then of course they got Peyton Manning. So all of it was for naught anyway, but you don't, to make a change at quarterback, you want to make sure that you're not just giving up, right? That is the one thing that coaches struggle against. When you make a change at quarterback to a rookie, you don't, it's not a preseason game where you just, we'll just see what he has. You do owe it to the team and everybody in the organization to be in, you owe it to them to be like, this still is the best option for us to win. And sometimes it's not that. Sometimes a rookie has to play. But you can't tell your coaching staff, your defensive line coach, your offensive line coach, your linebackers coach, your special teams coach, everybody get here at 4 o'clock in the morning because we're going to start preparing for the game coming up this weekend, when everybody in the building knows that the only reason we're preparing for a game on this weekend is the quarterback is going to play. He's a rookie. We need to see what he has. No, you have to be like, we're letting the rookie play because the rookie gives us a better chance than the other options that we have at the position. And so, yes, we do need the defense to play at a top level and the offensive line to play at a top level and the running backs to play at a top level. We're not giving up. We need to put him in the game in the best possible way to win the game. And so that's what Tomlin has up against his, you know, this fan base that's now screaming for Kenny Pickett. On the flip side, look at what the Browns are doing. The Browns, remember they were talking, do you keep Baker Mayfield? Do you get Jimmy Garoppolo? Who's Jacoby Brissett? Hasn't he done his time in this league? Right? He was the backup to, what was it, Tua last year? He's played for the Patriots. He started for the Colts. Right? He's Jacoby, what have we seen from Jacoby Brissett? You never want your quarterback to be, you know, your backup quarterback. We always ask this question, what percentage of the starter is still better than the backup? But you don't want your backup, you don't want it to be such a huge drop-off that the season feels like it's lost because he's playing. That's not, you know, there's some good money that you should be investing in backup quarterbacks. Not $40 million, but you should be willing to go out and get somebody that's competent enough to play that position. They have a guy that's doing that, right? No, he's not flashy. He's not throwing 6 touchdowns a game, but he throws a pretty good ball. And so far this season, he's played well enough that if you're looking at an 11-game absence for Deshaun Watson, if he can go 7-4, that's fantastic. If he goes 8-3, that's a bonus. Now, don't get me wrong. The Browns have got some tough games coming up, and he should have won these 3 games. They're better than the 3 teams they've played. But they're this is 2 wins in the books already. Should have been 3, but still, 2 wins in the books already. And if you can produce a winning record and be around the in the conversation as in a decent enough way by the time Deshaun Watson gets on the field, you might have something. They got to play the Falcons next. Yep, they're the Chargers, the Ravens, the Bengals are still on the schedule before Deshaun Watson comes back. They play the Bills before Deshaun Watson comes back. But if he can squeeze out a few more victories, that's exactly what his job is. Mitch Trubisky's job is not to do that. Mitch Trubisky's job is to earn the starting job, keep the starting job, win as many football games as you can. Jacoby Brissett's job is to win as many football games as he can in an 11-week period. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up, and we'll continue to talk about the NFL as we get ready for week 3. College football last night, West Virginia went on the road, beat Virginia Tech. That was a good win for the Mountaineers. Illinois shutting out Chattanooga, but that was expected. Coastal Carolina with the win over Georgia State. Those were three college football games that were going on last night. Again, full slate, including Tennessee and Florida. That's where the game day crew is going to be. No, they're not going to Lawrence, Kansas for Kansas Duke. Stop selling me that. Ugh. Wake me up when either one of them are in the top 25. When that happens, then you can have game day go there. I liked it when game day went to Appalachian State. That's really cool. But game day should be at a top 25 versus top 25 matchup.
Yeah.
There were two choices that I would have accepted. I would have said for game day. Tennessee, Florida. But the other one was Clemson, Wake Forest. That game's going on in Winston-Salem. That's an ACC top 25. But SEC top 25 trumps an ACC top 25. Sorry. Don't mean to be rude.
So if you have that hand, bet all in.
So tonight I got a high school football game to do here locally in Nashville. It's a good little drive. I think almost close to a 2-hour drive for me to get to this game. It's near the Kentucky border. So the team I cover is kind of a big program. It's been in the playoffs for a number of years, and they're going to play this school that's, again, small town up in the corner of the up near top of the state.
Small school getting paid $1 million.
Yeah. It's small school, but it's still, they just got into the division. I don't want to bore anybody with high school football geographics, but you know, they just got into the division and we got to go there. And so the program director of the station that I'm doing this for, he sent me a note saying, "Hey man, sorry to tell you this, but the school's press box is really tiny. They don't have any room." So they're going to put a little table in the stands for you guys to broadcast with an extension cord. And so I'm like, okay, all right, I guess that'll work. But luckily for me, I learned a tip from an old boss years ago. He said when I was doing games, he said, you know what's a good tool to have? And I said, what? He goes, a laminator. He goes, do you have a laminator? I go, no. He goes, get one. He goes, when you make your roster and your sheets, laminate them. And he goes, because a lot of places, you know, the press boxes are open. The wind blows a lot. The wind can get in there. And if you've got papers lying around, they'll fly all over the place. The last thing you want to do is be on the air scrambling while you're picking up your papers after a wind gust. Take laminated papers. Take laminated sheets, your roster. It has a little extra work, but it's worth it. And I've been doing that for years, years and years and years. All the years that I've been doing this, I laminate the rosters and any notes that I take. I laminate them all. And I think tonight it's going to come in handy. It's chilly now. Fall is in the air. Wind is blowing. Tonight, I might actually feel the use out of all the years of running those stupid papers through a laminating machine. I buy a whole fresh kit of laminating sheets every year. I think that's going to come in handy now tonight. My partner will be like, wow, this is great. I'm like, yep, and they're not blowing all over the place. We can put them on the table and away we go. So anyway, future broadcasters, take that advice. Take away, take you want. Laminate your sheets, especially if you're in a windy spot. But I am looking forward, I guess, to hobnobbing it with the locals. Yikes.
Telling you, man, sit in the student section.
Yeah, I might have to. I might have to, yeah. Especially being on the road. But it's always cool, these little tiny towns, and they just get all together to get ready for a high school football game. It's pretty neat. I've always enjoyed that aspect of the job, the community involvement. So, Wake Up Call continues.